I'm Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is August 18th, 2012. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, an article written by Michael Winham entitled, I'd Stake My Life That Stephen Hawking Is Wrong About Heaven. Mike, you have staked your life on it. You have lived your life as if the fairy tales in the Bible were true. Those are years you will never get back. Years wasted talking to imaginary friends. His article begins, Hawking says some admirable things, but the idea that I believe in life after death because I'm afraid of the dark is insulting. Mike, you should feel insulted for holding the beliefs of a child. He said, like Stephen Hawking, I have been living with motor neuron disease, MND. Well, Mike, if your beliefs were true, one might wonder why God would reward one of his followers with such a horrible, debilitating disease. If Hawking's beliefs are true, then wondering is unnecessary. It is easily explained by biology and evolution. He wrote, like Hawking, I'm one of the lucky few not to have died within months of diagnosis. Mike, if what you believe is true, one would think that you would have been considered lucky to be taken to your Lord as soon as possible. Why are none of you people in a hurry to see the big guy? If he is everything you claim he is, why would you even waste one more minute down here on Earth? He continues, I'm 9 years younger than Hawking and have had the symptoms of the disease for only 10 years, compared with Hawking's 49. However, for those 10 years, I've also lived with the prospect of an early death. Unlike Professor Hawking, I am not a superstar scientist. I'm simply a small-time writer who used to be a teacher and a vicar. And therein lies the problem, Mike. As a superstar scientist, Hawking has been trained to apply the scientific method to his beliefs. You are simply a small-time writer and has-been teacher. But the important part is that you are a vicar, a clergyman. That is why you must deny reality and base your beliefs not on proven scientific fact, but on faith, which is just another word for nonsense. Now Mike writes, it seems to me that while some things Stephen Hawking says in the interview, as it's reported, are unarguably true, some are also admitted hypotheses, and some are merely tendentious. One of the features of MND, both for him as for me, is that it affects your ability to speak, and hence pares down what you say to the bare bones. That's not, of course, the case when you have time to type a script. Hence, sometimes you are frustrated by your inability to nuance your ideas. And so it may be that his very categorical answers are the nub of his opinion, but not the full expression. Mike, I didn't find any ambiguity in his opinions. Mike continues, for example, there's something of nothing buttery about his comments about death. And now he quotes Hawking. I regard the brain as a computer which will stop working when its components fail. There is no heaven or afterlife for broken down computers. That is a fairy story for people afraid of the dark. And now Mike continues. It's unarguably true that there's no heaven for broken down computers, as I have found to my cost when I poured fruit juice over my laptop. The brain may be nothing but a most remarkable computer, yet there's something generically different from a computer in a brain, which when it starts to malfunction, as happens in MND, can begin to love Wagner's music and enjoy life more. So Mike, you think the fact that you love music and enjoy life means there must be an invisible ghost pulling everyone's strings? He said, that, I would say, is irrational but not uncommon. Mike, that was the first truly accurate statement you've written. He said human beings, it would appear, are something more than machines. Mike, Hawking didn't mean that we are literally machines. He was only speaking metaphorically. Mike said, maybe science will one day describe what the difference is. Mike, time to go back to school, but this time as a student, not a teacher. Sign up for biology, and you might discover that science already can tell you what the difference is. He said, Hawking tells us that the universe is governed by science. I think I understand what he means. Mike, that's a good start. So why do I have the feeling that you're about to fumble? Mike said it is certainly discoverable by science. Scientific theories that don't fit with the evidence of the universe fail. In simple terms, science is governed by the universe, not the other way around. Mike, that is exactly why it is called science. In those cases where it is the other way around, we call it religion. He said, what's interesting is that this is, in effect, what Hawking says, talking about the beauty of science. It's beautiful when it makes simple explanations of phenomena or connections between different observations, citing the double helix and fundamental equations in physics as examples. I find myself admiring and agreeing with much of what Professor Hawking says. Mike, so you agree with everything so long as it doesn't impact your religious beliefs. How generous of you. Mike continues, but I find his ethical deduction and his quasi-religious observation sadly lacking. So here we are. What should we do? Hawking is asked, the question sounds similar to ones posed to great religious teachers of the past. His answer is disappointing. And now he quotes Hawking, we should seek the greatest value of our action. To which Mike replies, it's certainly thought-provoking. What exactly does that mean for this or that action? And it is a principle that is reinforced by the experience of life-threatening illness. One could say, don't waste your life. Yet as a rule for life, it lacks both the impact and the practicality of the great Judeo-Christian answer to that question. Love God above yourself and love your neighbor as yourself. Unless he's gay, right, Mike? Or Muslim? Or Buddhist? Or Hindu? Or atheist? Or you get the picture. Hawking's answer results in people loving their families and friends above all else. Your answer places them below an invisible ghost with a long history of violence and murder. The fact that you actually think your answer is a better way to live one's life is disturbing. Mike said, even those who are unwilling to subscribe to the first part can understand the second part and usually admit its validity. Mike, but as I just pointed out, you people are the last to love your neighbors as yourselves. Your entire 2,000-year history is one of death and destruction for any who would not submit. He writes, finally, Stephen Hawking's headlined observation about death, that an afterlife is a fairy story for people afraid of the dark, is both sad and misinformed. Mike, what is sad is for adults to live their entire lives believing in those fairy tales. And how is it misinformed? Do you have some evidence to the contrary? Mike writes, openness to the theoretical possibility of there being 11 dimensions and fundamental particles as yet undiscovered shows an intellectual humility strangely at odds with writing off the possibility of other dimensions of existence. Mike, that's because those dimensions have some evidence to support the belief that they might exist. No evidence exists to support the belief that your dimension exists. Mike said, for someone facing the prospect of an early death with probably an unpleasant prelude, the idea of extinction holds no more fear than sleep. It really is insulting to accuse me of believing there might be life after death because I'm afraid of the dark. Mike, take all the insult you want. You deserve every bit of it. He said, on the contrary, sad though I shall be to leave those behind that I love, I suspect the end of life, whatever happens, will be a relief. And like Pascal making his wager, if it is dark, I really won't mind, because, of course, there won't be me to mind. Mike, how did I know you would resort to Pascal's wager? Because that is always the last argument of desperate ghost worshippers. Pascal's wager is a fool's bet. How do you know which god to wager on? The answer is that you will wager on whichever invisible ghost in which you were brought up to believe in. It's simply a matter of where you were born. Mike, here's a wager for you. If you happen to be born in Tehran, I'll bet you wouldn't be wagering on the Christian God. He writes, strangely enough, my theory that there is a form of life after we die is not some sort of wishful thinking. Mike, the way you began that sentence, strangely enough, was right on the money. So if it isn't wishful thinking, what is it based on? Mike writes, it's based on evidence. If the brain is a computer, then, when I was studying where Stephen Hawking now teaches, I came on a mass of data of which the most convincing, the neatest explanation, was that death is not the end of life. Mike, can you give us one piece of evidence from that mass of data? He writes, it wasn't the most comfortable nor most obvious of conclusions, but the forensic case was forceful and beautiful, providing simple explanations of phenomena or connections between different observations. Mike, that was beautiful. Totally meaningless, but beautiful. Now he writes, the best exposition I found was by the then director of the Institute of Advanced Legal Studies in London, Professor Sir Norman Anderson, in The Evidence for the Resurrection, later republished as part of Jesus Christ, the Witness of History. My disturbing conclusion was that if it happened once, as seemed beyond reasonable doubt, then I needed to revise my whole worldview. Mike, that is a disturbing conclusion. So where is the evidence for your disturbing conclusion? So you revised your whole worldview on the premise, if it happened once? Mike, you are taking ignorance to a whole new level. He said, one may wish to dismiss Jesus Christ or Julius Caesar as fairy stories, even as bunk. Mike, neat trick. Dishonest, but neat. You lump Jesus in with someone for whom there is little doubt that he actually lived, so as to imply that if one was real, the other must be too. The main reason why one can reasonably accept the existence of Julius Caesar is that there are no supernatural claims surrounding his life. The same is not true for Jesus. However, that does not rule out the existence of a man named Jesus who was reputed to have performed miracles. Mike continues, but until one has examined the evidence in Anderson's forensic manner, that's a premature judgment. Mike, religious scholars do not employ forensic techniques. And premature judgment? Are you serious? You've had 2,000 friggin' years. How exactly are you defining premature? He writes, I suspect many do that. As for the idea that belief in an afterlife is a consolation, it is not just about heaven. That's right, Mike. Let's not forget about that other place. You know, the one that Pascal's wager relies on to keep the faithful, faithful. He said, most faiths, in fact, have a notion of judgment, which is hardly comfortable for anyone, although it does focus the motivation not to waste one's life. Mike, the motivation not to waste one's life explains the existence of a billion non-believers. Now he writes, moreover, in our situation, Professor Hawking surely knows better than that some notion in your head, whatever that notion might be, makes the frustrations and pains of a terminal illness somehow more bearable. That's the nonsense of those who have not been there. I can't prove it, of course, but on good grounds, I'd stake my life on it. that beyond death will be another great adventure. But first, I have to finish this one. No, Mike, you can't prove it. Nor can you produce any evidence that it is even possible. But that last childish little fantasy about beginning another great adventure pretty much proves everything that Hawking said about you. I would only add one word to Hawking's description. Pathetic. And now we move to the science segment. Today's story, keeping the flu away. Synthetic protein activates immune system within 2 hours. San Diego State University researchers may have found the secret to helping the immune system fight off the flu before it gets you sick. A new study finds that EP67, a powerful synthetic protein, is able to activate the innate immune system within just 2 hours of being administered. Prior to this study, EP67 had been primarily used as something added to a vaccine to help activate the immune response, but researchers saw potential for it to work on its own. The flu virus is very sneaky and actively keeps the immune system from detecting it for a few days until you are getting symptoms. Introducing EP67 into the body within 24 hours of exposure to the flu virus caused the immune system to react almost immediately to the threat, well before the body normally would. Because EP67 doesn't work on the virus but on the immune system itself, it functions the same no matter the flu strain. Unlike the influenza vaccine, which has to exactly match the currently circulating strain. While this study focuses on the flu, EP67 has the potential to work on other respiratory diseases and fungal infections and could have huge potential for emergency therapeutics. When you find out you've been exposed to the flu, the only treatments available now target the virus directly, but they are not reliable and often the virus develops a resistance against them. EP67 could potentially be a therapeutic that someone would take when they know they've been exposed that would help the body fight off the virus before they get sick. It could even be used in the event of a new strain of infectious disease, before the actual pathogen has been identified, as in SARS or the 2009 H1N1 influenza outbreak. Right now, the testing has been done primarily in mice by infecting them with a flu virus. Those that were given a dose of EP67 within 24 hours of the infection didn't get sick, or as sick, as those that were not treated with EP67. The level of illness in mice is measured by weight loss. Typically, mice lose approximately 20% of their weight when they are infected with the flu. But mice treated with EP67 lost an average of just 6%. More importantly, mice who were treated a day after being infected with a lethal dose of influenza did not die. There are also huge implications for veterinary applications, since EP67 is active in animals, including birds. Future research will examine the effect EP67 has in the presence of a number of other pathogens and look closer at exactly how EP67 functions within different cells in the body. And now for the final segment of the show, Famous Quotes. Today, John Stewart, born 1962. He is an American political satirist, writer, television host, actor, media critic, and stand-up comedian. He is widely known as host of The Daily Show, a satirical news program that airs on Comedy Central. Stewart started as a stand-up comedian, but branched into television as host of Short Attention Span Theater for Comedy Central. He went on to host his own show on MTV called The Jon Stewart Show, and then hosted another show on MTV called You Wrote It, You Watch It. He has also had several film roles as an actor. Stewart became the host of The Daily Show on Comedy Central in early 1999. He is also a writer and co-executive producer of the show. After Stewart joined, The Daily Show steadily gained popularity and critical acclaim, resulting in his 16 Emmy Awards. Stewart hosted the 78th and 80th Academy Awards. He is the co-author of America, the Book, A Citizen's Guide to Democracy in Action. And that's spelled one word, in action. which was one of the best-selling books in the U.S. in 2004, and Earth, the Book, A Visitor's Guide to the Human Race, released in 2010. And now for the quote from John Stewart. Religion, it's given hope in a world torn apart by religion.
Are you ready, Bruce? Start walking.